The first public release of Xen was in 2004. That was Xen 1.0. And there'd been various releases before then, but this was really the first one where we had a complete system that people could actually go out and deploy. And of course, it was released under the GPL. And a lot of people did pick up that release and start using it in sort of production environments. And shortly after that, we had the first Xen Developers Summit. The first one was in Cambridge. I think we had something like just 30, 40 people turn up to it. Since then, we've just had our sixth summit a few weeks ago, which was in Boston, and we had over 150 people turn up to. These are all hardcore developers coming from about 14 different universities, 12 different countries, and also representing about 50 different vendors. And not only are we having the sort of the six main summits in the USA, we're also now having summits in Asia. There's one in Tokyo in a few months' time. So it really is a worldwide development community that now exists around Xen. So back in 2004, most of what we'd been able to do, although we'd written a lot about what needed to go into the hardware to help virtualization, most of what we'd been able to do up until that point was really being done in software. We'd managed to get some hardware vendors, I/O device vendors, to implement some of our suggestions, but we hadn't really had any effect on the chip vendors. But it was really from 2004 where, the chip vendors started putting features into the chips, Intel and AMD, which would really help virtualization. And now we've been able to work very closely with them to really get the most out of those features. And also in 2005, we started seeing more and more operating system vendors adopt the power virtualizations, as we called them, these extensions which were made to the operating system to make them work better in a virtualized environment, and start incorporating that support into their mainstream OS releases. And that was a very significant moment in the life of the Xen project, where it really did start becoming enterprise class software that people were deploying in production, and there were large vendors standing behind those deployments ready to support them. So a very significant release of the project was 3.0, which was in December 2005. And this was the first release where you could actually run Windows virtualized on top of Xen. And for all of the releases previous to that, it had really been about virtualizing open source OSs like Linux, all the various BSDs, and some Solaris. But 3.0 was the first release which actually ran Windows. And that was very significant, because I'd say that today with Xen, the vast majority of guest operating systems running on top of Xen are actually Windows. So that getting that first release was key there. And also, we've had quite an effect on the rest of the virtualization industry, and that this idea of adding extensions to the operating system to make it enable it to work better in a virtualized environment has now been adopted by everybody else. VMware and Microsoft are now adopting those same kind of techniques. So something which I found very exciting happened this year, back in May, which, it was always our vision or our view that the virtualization should actually be something which is a property of the platform, i.e. when you buy a machine, it should have a virtualization layer installed upon it, and then everything just exists as virtual machines on top of the hypervisor. That's how it was in the days of the mainframe, and it's how I think it will be on commodity hardware too. And that's really started happening earlier this year, when HP and Dell started offering Xen embedded in Flash on most of their server lines. And so Xen is actually on Flash inside the machine, so it's actually shipping built into the hardware. And as we'll be looking at later, that provides a number of real benefits for actually getting the most out of the platform and really enabling you to optimize the virtualization for that given machine. So something else which is happening this month is that there's a new release of Zen coming out. It was going to be called Zen 3.3, but just in the last few days, there's been some discussion, and you know, it's about time, since it's 2.5 years since the last time we bumped that major version number, and there's been so much stuff added to Zen in the meantime, that we're actually going to call this new release Zen 4.0. It's something like 10,000 check-ins to the tree since the last major release. So this is going to, I think, be another major milestone in the Zen project. So this is the Zen project mission, which was decided upon at one of the Zen summits a few years ago, where the aim of the Zen project is to really build the industry standard open source hypervisor. And we really see it as building the engine, sort of the core component that then lots of different vendors can pick up and then build into their own cars. So there are lots of different ways of taking Zen and building it into a product. And the goal of the Zen project is to do a great job of building that engine and enabling it to go into a lot of different vendors' products. It's quite a similar model to the way the Linux kernel is developed, and then it gets productized by a whole bunch of different vendors. So Zen started off having a great reputation for performance, and that's something which we, as the project, seek to maintain. And that really comes from two techniques, which we'll be looking at in more detail later, but exploiting new hardware features, helping the hardware vendors figure out what features to put in the hardware, and then working with operating system vendors to make changes to their OSs to enable them to work better in a virtualized environment. So Zen has had a good reputation for stability and quality. There's a lot of effort goes into to testing releases. I know of over 200 machines which basically crank away 24/7 running tests to check releases before they go out the door. So there's a lot of effort put into automated testing and trying to do a good job of getting high quality releases. But part of that is now that because Zen is being used in more and more production environments, now it's being built into to machines when they're shipped. Something which we have to take really seriously is security. You know, Zen is now a major target. But as we'll be looking at later, there are Zen's architecture really puts it in a good position for being able to do something about ensuring that we have a secure system, or doing our best to ensure we have a secure system by having a good architecture to enable that. So Zen started off life supporting just x86, but there have been lots of ports to a number of different architectures done over time. The IE64 port is a very active port, and it ships on a lot of very large systems. It's been booted on 4096 processor IE64 supercomputers, so it really has been booted on the very large. But also now there's a port of Zen to ARM, which was done by Samsung, and now a number of other vendors are getting involved. And later we'll see how virtualization, in particular Zen, can be useful even on smartphones and portable devices. So Zen started off life in a university, and it was really the product of research going on in the university. And one of the things we've really wanted to do as the Zen community is to keep close connections and close ties with different universities. So there are many different university projects which are doing stuff with Zen, either building new features into Zen or building sort of entire new uses of application using Zen, uses of virtualization using Zen. And that's great because it gives the Zen project this really strong roadmap where we can pick these features up and fold them into the main line. And that's what's really enabled Zen to have some really interesting, exciting new features. So the aim is if anything that happens in the world of virtualization happens on Zen first. So with all of these different vendors picking up Zen and building into their products, one of the key things we need to worry about is interoperability, making sure that virtual machines can be moved between all the different vendors' products, and also looking at interoperability with other hypervisors. In particular, there's been quite a bit of work going on to ensure that Zen and Microsoft's Hyper-V are interoperable, so you can move virtual machines from one to the other very easily, and make use so that if you've got a guest which has been ported to run well on top of Xen, if you run that guest on top of Hyper-V, you'll get that same good performance by taking advantage of those power virtualization extensions. And similarly the other way around, and making sure that when Windows 2008 runs on top of Xen, it also gets great performance. And so there's actually been quite a lot of cooperation with Microsoft to actually enable that to happen. So this most recent development series has seen patches from over 250 different contributors. And generally the way the project works is the vendors worry about optimizing Xen for their particular thing that they sell. It's pretty obvious, really, that that's what they care about. Intel care about getting the most out of an Intel CPU. The same for AMD. For the hardware, I/O device vendors care about optimizing Xen for their particular I/O device. And similarly with the operating system vendors, they care about optimizing their OS to run well on Xen and possibly adding extensions to Xen to enable their OS to run better. And then there are all of the management vendors which are interested in all those APIs. And so you have all of these vendors who are really sort of caring about their own thing, and then there's a kind of a core group of developers which really worry about pulling it all together, making sure that the feature interactions all work out, and making sure that the releases are stable. So there are... we've already talked about the research community, which not just academic research community in universities, but there are also a lot of commercial research labs which do work on Xen, such as IBM have done a lot of work in security research, as have folks like the NSA and Navy Research Labs, etc. And Xen really benefits from that that research being done on Xen. So the Xen project is hosted at Xen.org, and there's a Xen advisory board made up of the sort of leading contributors to Xen and various vendors that ship Xen that really oversee the project and have management oversight and help determine the roadmap. And I'm the chairman of Xen.org now. So around Xen, there are a lot of different companies which contribute to Xen. As I said, there are over 50 different vendors at the last Xen Development Summit, and they're really the hardcore developers. But there's this whole wide range of different companies who are building products that either incorporate Xen or build on top of Xen. So a lot of these vendors are obviously management companies with various management tools that can make use of Xen and make it enable you to build sort of enterprise-scale deployments of Xen. So looking now at why virtualization is important. Well, as with most things in the IT industry, the role of virtualization is to really clear up the mess created by the last big idea in IT, which of course was around scale-out and taking all of these applications which are running on mainframes and then running them on commodity operating systems and commodity hardware. But the typical way that that's done in the corporate world is to deploy one application per commodity x86 server. And the reason for that is that typical operating systems, and we're really talking about Windows here, but it's true of some extent to the Unixes and even Linux, fail to provide the necessary isolation to actually enable you to install multiple applications on the same OS instance. And there are all sorts of reasons for that. Obviously, you can have configuration isolation issues, what's referred to as DLL hell on Windows. You can kind of avoid that on the Unixes okay. But there are also all sorts of other reasons why you might want to just isolate applications to a single OS instance. In particular, if you want a predictable performance or temporal isolation, that can be very hard to provide running multiple applications on a single OS instance, because there can be a lot of complex interactions between them. It can be very difficult to get any performance predictability. And similarly, you often want strong spatial isolation, and this is where you're sure that the two different applications are actually kept separate from each other, so that if one of these applications gets compromised, gets exploited, it can't read data out of some other application or corrupt it or do something malicious to it, or that it can't crash the system. And similarly, you might want to be able to do things like upgrade the operating system instance that one application is running on, but not the other one. So for all sorts of reasons, not least because the vendor of the application is quite likely not to support you unless you just run a single instance, people like running this one application per OS instance. And as a result, you end up with what's called server sprawl. And it's quite amazing, some of these data centers that I've been able to visit over the last few years since getting involved in Xen, seeing data centers containing 10,000 machines, where a lorry turns up every week, a huge lorry unloading pallets full of servers, which then get racked up and just expand the data center. It's a huge problem for these companies. And because of this one application per OS instance, and hence per commodity server, you end up with very low CPU utilizations. And so there's a lot of opportunity if you can run multiple OS instances on the same server and get those same guarantees about temporal isolation and spatial isolation, then there's obviously a lot of benefit that can be had from improving utilization. And you get all sorts of other benefits from deploying virtualization too. Not least of which is the fact that many of these applications are only written to be single-threaded or perhaps support some small number of threads. And as we move to a multi-core world, these applications just wouldn't be able to take advantage of the new hardware, and so you'd get even lower utilization rates. So for many applications, server consolidation is fairly essential to actually enable you to actually make use of the quad-core CPUs that you're now able to buy. And from early next year, you'll have 8 logical threads a CPU, and then by the end of the year, there'll be 16 logical threads per CPU. So, you've really got to make use of virtualization to be able to get the most out of those applications. And virtualization also provides a lot of benefits from improved manageability. Even simple things like power cycling a server or trying to get access to the console of the server when it's sitting in a lights-out data center. So all of the different hardware vendors have solutions to doing that, but depending on the brand of server you've got to use a different tool for going to do that, whereas in a virtualized world, it's very easy to reboot a virtual machine or get a secure connection to a given console. And also for just doing things like performance monitoring, virtualization provides you with an easy way of getting CPU utilization and I/O utilization stats out that would require deploying things in each of the OS instances otherwise. And of course, you've got a big advantage from the fact that a given virtual machine, because it's running on virtual hardware, can be deployed on any of your physical servers. You don't have to worry about building an image for a particular HP or Dell or Intel or AMD server. You can just boot that virtual machine image up on any of them and it will just work. And that image portability is obviously extremely useful for doing things like disaster recovery, because it means that you don't have to have an identical hardware setup. You can just arrange to mirror the disks of the virtual machines over to some secondary site. You don't have to have the same hardware there, and then if you have a disaster, just fail over to running things on that second site with whatever hardware happens to be there. So with more sophisticated virtualization solutions like Xen or things like VMware Virtual Infrastructure, you can make use of a feature called live relocation, or what VMware call vMotion. And that enables you to move a running virtual machine image from one physical server to another. And the way that this works is, as the virtual machine is running, you're trying to synchronize the memory image from the source machine to the destination machine. And so over the network, you'll be copying the contents of the memory across to that destination machine. And the application, the OS and the application will carry on running throughout. So if you're logged in, typing away at an SSH connection, you won't notice anything's happening, or if you're running some database, it will be continuing to serve transactions. And once you've copied the memory across, you then look and see what has changed, because as the application runs, it will be making updates to memory, and then actually go back and start shipping those changes. And hopefully those changes will be quicker to ship because there's a smaller number of them, and you just repeat that process iteratively until there's just a small difference in the memory state between the two virtual machines. And then you stop the virtual machine on the source machine, copy across the final differences in memory, and then copy across the state of all of the virtual CPU, all of the registers and information out there, the devices, etc., copy it across to the destination machine, check everything has arrived safely, and if it has, you just unpause the virtual machine on the destination server and then destroy it on the source server. And that virtual machine has just seamlessly moved from one machine to another. And that final changeover stage takes typically around 100 milliseconds. The chances are, you're not going to notice it's happening. And so that's a very powerful feature for enabling you to move workloads around. And you can use that in a number of ways. You can use that to avoid planned downtime. So if you've got a machine that you want to power off, perhaps because you want to perform maintenance on it, or perhaps because you've realized that you can actually consolidate the virtual machines that you're running onto some smaller number of physical servers, so you can actually physically power off servers and hence save power. Then you can just make use of live relocation to move that running VM to another instance and then power off that original machine. And similarly, you can use exactly the same technique to enable you to distribute workloads around a set of machines within a data center. So if you've got a number of virtual machines which are running and not meeting various service level agreements or performance requirements, you can perhaps relocate one of those virtual machines to a less loaded server and then make all of your customers happy. And you can also use virtualization to enable high availability. So a very sort of common configuration of Xen is to have a number of hosts which are then set up to heartbeat between each other. So quite frequently Linux Heartbeat 2 gets used for this. So you can monitor the health of the servers. And if you spot that one of the servers has failed for whatever reason, you know that those virtual machines that were running on it will have disappeared. And because these virtual machines are portable, you can just bring them up on some other server. So these VMs are going to have to reboot, but you've been able to keep them running, or keep that service running with a fairly small outage. And virtualization, because of this sort of virtual hardware portability, makes that much easier to do. But one of the things that you can do which is particularly exciting is you can now do things like hardware fault tolerance, where you can actually have two virtual machines running on different physical servers and actually run them in lockstep. And there are a number of different techniques for doing this, but what that means that you can do is you can actually walk up to one of the servers, just pull the power plug out of it, so killing it instantly. But the application will just continue on the other server, so you'll get no loss of service. So one of the companies has currently a commercial offering built on top of Xen by a company called Marathon, which achieves that. But one of the things which is great about Xen being open source, there's actually three different efforts at three different universities to implement something similar, which have been running for a number of years. And they've come up with various different techniques for doing it. There's a technique called deterministic replay, and there are other techniques based on high-rate checkpointing. So one of the things that's happening this summer is there's a mini-summit occurring where all of the guys that have been working on this hardware fault tolerance are getting together and actually selecting a set of patches that will then go into upstream Xen. And so, we're already benefiting from the fact that there are these three different competing approaches, and we're already being able to pick and choose between them to get the best possible solution. Just to sort of demonstrate here, either of the machines can die, and the application will just carry on. So any network connections that were open all of that state just carries on seamlessly. So if you were transferring data across the network, the hosts at the other end wouldn't notice that anything odd has happened. So security is a real key issue for any virtualization software. Now, there's been a certain amount of stuff in the press over the years about things like blue pill and red pill attacks, where where the idea was to sneak a hypervisor in underneath an OS that was running on, or thought that it was running on bare metal, and that it would remain hidden. And although there was a lot of fuss made about this, it's not really a serious threat, because it's actually very easy for antivirus software to detect a hypervisor just as any other kind of malware, because you can always do sort of timing measurements and things like that. There are things which are very hard to virtualize. It's really impossible to provide virtualization that does a good enough job that you couldn't detect that you were running on it. And of course, the unfortunate thing about that is that folks who want to write copy protection schemes and things like that that try to stop themselves working or try to detect hypervisors and stop working on a hypervisor, they will be able to detect the presence of a hypervisor. But given that we believe we're moving to a world where everything is virtualized, having things that only work on bare metal hardware perhaps isn't going to be so interesting in the future. So although there are these sort of fictitious attacks, it is certainly the case that virtualization provides a real, having your virtualization infrastructure attacked is a real threat. And there are sort of two ways it can really be attacked. All of the various implementations of Xen are controlled over the network. So you've got some sort of network-facing web services API or RPC API that is used to control and configure the hypervisor, start virtual machines, etc. And obviously you've got to do a very good job of trying to secure that stack. And you just have to use all of the usual techniques for doing that. But another issue that you have is a VM containment. What you want to be sure can't happen is that if you've got you can't trust the users of a given virtual machine. You've got to assume that they're malicious, and you need to be able to prevent even someone with root access or who can modify the kernel of a virtual machine being able to break out and attack either into the hypervisor or gain access to other virtual machines. And that's something which we have to put a lot of work in the Xen project to try and defend against that. And that's where Xen's architecture as a true hypervisor really comes to the fore. Because Xen, what we try and do with Xen is to try and make the layer of code which runs as the most privileged thing in the system, what's called root ring zero, try and make that layer of code as small and thin as possible and push other functionality out into other modules that runs at reduced privilege. And we're, particularly in this latest release, we're making use of that technique quite extensively to remove functions which would normally, in other hypervisors, in other virtual machine monitors, would run as part of the core of the system, and actually move them out and run them at reduced privilege, so that even if someone manages to exploit them, and some of these things have quite a broad attack surface, so that's one of the reasons we did this, is we were quite concerned whether we would ever, even with enough code review, would ever be sure that we got all of the bugs out. So by deprivileging them, it reduces the risk. Even someone manages to compromise them, they haven't actually achieved anything, they're still running within a virtual machine. So we've used this approach in a number of different places in this next release of Xen, and as a result, the architecture really is the best architecture in terms of security of a virtualization stack. And there's been work that's been done on top of that to add things like the Xen security modules from the NSA, which enable you to further control the flow of information around the system. Also, you can make use of some of the features which are now built in the hardware with Zen to actually ensure that you're securely launching the hypervisor. So you can use the Trusted Platform module and Intel's Trusted Execution Technology, or AMD's SK init, to actually boot the system, to bring the system up and know that you're exactly what you're running. And that's obviously very important if you're perhaps providing a service hosting virtual machines, and those virtual machines want to know that they're running on top of a hypervisor which hasn't been compromised. Security really has been a key driver for the current release. But virtualization also enables you to improve the security of the virtual machines which are running on top of it. So although you're increasing the attack surface by adding a hypervisor, you're actually adding a lot of benefits in terms of being able to increase the security of the system as a whole. And so I certainly believe that the net benefit is definitely very positive. And one of the things you can do is to do things like administrative policy enforcement outside of the operating system. So there are a lot of features which you'd normally rely on the admin of any given operating system instance to have configured correctly. So to make sure they're running the antivirus software, that they have got the firewall installed and set up. Normally you're reliant on the admin of the VM to have got that all set up. But if you've got virtualization, you can actually do these functions outside of the virtual machine. So you've got some software running in a virtual machine, looking into another VM to do virus scanning on its behalf or to inspect network packets going in and out. And hence you're no longer reliant on the admin to have set it up correctly. And it's more secure in that if you think about what can happen with something like a virus scanner, in a conventional OS instance, if the VM or if the operating system gets compromised, perhaps there's some new exploit which the virus scanner doesn't know about yet, then the first thing it's going to do is to disable the virus scanner and then hide itself. So even if the virus scanner software gets updated at some point in the future, it still won't detect the malware which has now managed to attach itself. Whereas if the scanning is done outside of the virtual machine, it can you keep that integrity. So you will then, even if you didn't discover it immediately, you will then discover the compromise later. There's also a bunch of stuff we can do with using things which you couldn't do on real hardware, but you can do on virtualized hardware to actually make it harder to attack operating system instances in the first place. So one example of this is work we've been doing to add what's called immutable memory. So this is memory that an operating system kernel can irrevocably give up write access to. So it makes a call down to the hypervisor saying, I'm giving up write access to this area of memory, and then it will never be able to write to it again. And so it can use this to harden various key areas of the kernel code and various key tables like the system call code table, so that if some malware or some rootkit then tries to attach itself, it will fail because it will try writing to areas which the kernel has made immutable. So this is quite a useful technique for causing a lot of different rootkits to bounce off when they try and attach themselves to the system. And you'll detect that attack and then just freeze the virtual machine. But also you can abstract a lot of the complexity of the physical world from the administrator of the given virtual machine. They may think that they have a single network interface and perhaps a single iSCSI or single SCSI disk, whereas behind that, you might have some complicated multipath fiber channel infrastructure and perhaps bonded NICs, but you don't have to expose all of that complexity to the administrator of the VM. So by having virtualization, you've added another layer to the system. But despite adding another piece of software, you've actually simplified a bunch of things, particularly from the point of view of application vendors, because they can now, rather than having to certify, develop their app, and then certify it for a bunch of different operating systems, they're in a position where they can typically choose one and then certify the application on that particular instance of the OS, and providing the OS has been certified on the hypervisor and the hypervisor certified on the hardware, they'll know that that stack should all work together. And that's really enabling folks to start shipping their software as virtual appliances, sort of just packaged as a virtual machine with the software pre-installed. And what many of these vendors are now doing is looking to see how they can start tuning the operating system to better run their application. So in the first instance, that might be removing a whole bunch of stuff that they don't use, perhaps just pulling out user space packages. But they may also change the kernel compile options to really narrow down and strip out to just what they want. But they can go further than that and really do some deep optimizations specific to their given application. And we're seeing a whole bunch of different vendors doing that, particularly things like database vendors that are really tuning their particular version of Linux to run the database really well. And I haven't seen it diverge from mainline behavior. And also seeing folks create custom operating systems, so not based on anything pre-existing, optimized for running their particular application. There's examples of things like Sun with and also BEA with Java virtual machines, which are capable of running natively on top of Hypervisor, on top of Xen, and get better performance as a result, rather than having a full operating system kernel like Linux in there. But in general, this whole virtual appliance area is a great opportunity for Linux to really be the OS that these application vendors choose as the one they're going to optimize their applications for. So for maximizing performance, Xen really uses these two techniques of para-virtualization, which is the interface between the operating system and the hypervisor, to really optimize the operating system so it works best, or the operating system kernel, so it's aware that it's running in a virtualized environment and runs best in that environment. And there's what's called a hypercall interface, where the operating system can call down into the hypervisor to communicate information about what it's doing. And there are a very wide variety of different OSs which have been optimized to run on top of Xen. Also, obviously, all of the different Linux versions, both RHEL and SLES, have had the Xen extensions in them for quite a while. There's versions for both SLES 9, SLES 10, and RHEL 4, RHEL 5, and so forth. Also, Sun's Solaris is fully optimized to run Xen, and all of the different BSDs too. But also, there's been a lot of work done to work with Microsoft to get Windows optimized to run well on top of Xen. And Microsoft have added what they call enlightenments, which is their word for para-virtualization, to Windows 2008. And there's it's possible to shim those hypercalls that it makes to the corresponding Xen ones, and hence take advantage of all of those performance advantages you get of having para-virtualization. And that really works hand in hand with what's been happening on the hardware side of things, where obviously the CPU vendors have added support, have had support in the hardware or in the CPUs now for a number of years to assist virtualization, and we're seeing the second generation of that support coming out now. And Xen has really had a big role to play in defining, particularly what the second generation extensions are. But it's not just the CPUs that you have to worry about. Obviously, I/O is very important, and there's various changes you can make to I/O devices to make them work better in a virtualized environment. And we're only really just beginning to see those devices start hitting the market and become ubiquitous. But I/O really is the thing which right now, if you were to buy an off-the-shelf machine today, you'd see the greatest overhead would be for I/O-intensive applications. Into next year, where some of this new smarter hardware comes out, you'll see that overhead really become very small. And it's certainly the belief that we'll be able to get the overhead sufficiently small, and that's something which is going to happen soon. It's already small enough for many applications, or most applications. But the goal is to make the overhead of virtualization sufficiently small that it's something you don't think about. You just have virtualization as being something which is ubiquitously deployed throughout your data center, and probably come on the machine when it was bought and shipped from the factory. And even if you're not doing things like server consolidation, even if you're only running a single virtual machine on the server, you still have virtualization enabled just so that you get all of the other benefits of being able to, the increased manageability and the ability to move the workload around. And so that's really, how we see virtualization becoming a sort of ubiquitous thing that's on every server and not just about server virtualization. So if we look at some of these hardware extensions, obviously, multi-core CPUs have been very beneficial to virtualization because it makes the job of scheduling different workloads between a single CPU easier if you've just got more cores to play with. And that one of the interesting things is you wouldn't normally think that virtualization as a technique would be able to improve the performance of a given application. Usually you just think of it of having some overhead, hopefully just an overhead of a small number of percent. But in some instances, we actually see performance improve. And the reason is that many applications aren't actually tuned very well to work in SMP environments. And even something like Apache, we've seen instances where rather than running one 4 CPU instance, you might actually get better throughput running 4 1 CPU instances on top of a hypervisor. And the aggregate throughput that you get is in some cases higher than just running it on a single wider OS instance. So Xen's also enabled to take advantage of all of the security technologies which have been added, things like Trusted Platform Module and Intel Trusted Execution Technology and the AMD equivalent. Also, another key thing that's becoming commonplace on server platforms now and also on client platforms is IOMMU. And this is basically a memory management unit for DMAs occurring across the I.O. bus, your PCI Express bus. And that's very important to close a potential security hole where if you had a virtual machine which you gave direct access to through to the hardware, then if you don't have an IOMMU, you actually have to trust that virtual machine not to instruct that hardware to do DMAs that will hit memory belonging to other OSs. And so if you haven't got an IOMMU, you shouldn't get past hardware directly through to a given virtual machine. There's usually very few reasons why you'd want to do that anyway. But if you have got an IOMMU, then that ties in with some of these new smart I/O devices that are appearing on the market where you actually do want to pass that device through to the guest. And if you've got an IOMMU, you can actually do that in a safe and protected fashion. Also, these second-generation virtualization extensions, things like nested page tables or Intel EPT, Flex Priority, Flex Migrate, all of these things Xen is able to take advantage of to really get the most out of the hardware. And I've already talked a bit about some of these smart NICs and HPAs which are appearing to enable I/O performance to improve. So just to sort of give you an idea as to how Xen performance has evolved over time, this is just looking at one benchmark. It's kind of a tough benchmark for virtualization, running Windows 2003 and building the Windows DDK. And the smaller is better. The six little clusters are just different configurations. And the blue is where we were when Xen 3.0 shipped. Red is Xen 3.1. And yellow is, it's just a bit old, but 3.2. And then there's been further improvements made again for this current upcoming 4.0 release. But over time, we're just seeing this, we're getting better and better at doing this this virtualization. So the overhead now, even for this tough benchmark, is typically on the current Xen 4.0 is typically less than 10%, and this really is a tough one. Many benchmarks the overhead will be much smaller. And in this example here, comparing native on the sort of the blue to actually this happens to be the middle bar happens to be a different commercial hypervisor, and then the yellow bar is what Xen does, and obviously larger is better in that scenario. So you know, Zen really does very well from a performance point of view. You know, it really does do very well running Windows and running Linux. For running Linux workloads, it really is just exceptional. So again, comparing the blue being native and the yellow being Zen, and larger is better. And this is looking at running SpecJBB on RHEL 5 using the SunJVM. And this is the different clusters are with different numbers of virtual CPUs. And one of the things which Zen's put a lot of effort into being able to do is to be able to run with large numbers of virtual CPUs, because that's important if you want to run, but don't want to do server consolidation, if you just want to run, you know, have virtualization as something which is ubiquitous, and just have a, you know, run out all of your workloads as virtualized. And so being able to get good SMP scalability is important. And again, this is data from the last release. I think the new release is going to be even better as you start adding large numbers of CPUs. We've been doing testing on 32 and 64 CPU systems to really try and optimize the performance there. So I talked a bit earlier, but just going into a little more detail here about deploying Zen embedded into system firmware. I really think that this is something which we're going to see more of. And by really optimizing the way that the Zen is built and the drives, etc., it has, you can really configure it for the hardware. And the hardware vendors like this, because it means that any new features that get added in the CPUs or in the the various I/O devices which come with that platform, they can make sure that the hypervisor has got the appropriate support for them, so they can sort of develop that in lockstep with what they're doing with the hardware. And as I said earlier, Zen is now an option on both HP and Dell servers, and with more vendors coming out with embedded virtualization soon. And the hardware vendors, you know, clearly think that this is the best way to go about doing it. It's a quote from Scott Farron, who's the a VP at HP, saying that that Zen is their recommended solution for virtualization on ProLiant systems. So one of the, you know, so far everything we've talked about has been about server, but I think one of the most exciting things that's happening on Zen is there's a lot of work being done over the last year to get Zen working well on client devices, so desktops and laptops. And a lot of the use cases there are very different from server virtualization, which is obviously around sort of consolidation and image portability and things like that. In the client world, it's really around security, manageability, and supportability. And this idea that a user can perhaps turn up at a company with whatever, you know, their own personal laptop, and you don't worry about that, because if it's got a hypervisor built into it, then any of your corporate applications and things like that, you can actually supply as virtual machines, which will then run on that system, whether it's regardless of what OS it is, whether it's Windows or Mac OS X or Linux. But that if you've got a true hypervisor, which has been securely booted, and you know is providing good isolation between those virtual machines, then as a chief security officer or CIO, you can feel comfortable about letting your corporately sensitive applications and data get downloaded to that given laptop and run, knowing that they're going to be looked after, that the hypervisor is going to be ensured that the content is encrypted on disk, and then any other virtual machines that are running on the system can't examine data belonging to that virtual machine or otherwise mess with it. And you really need a hypervisor to do that. Just using something like VMware Workstation or Virtual PC just can't give you those guarantees, because if you've got some keylogger or some other malware running in the OS that's running your desktop, it'll just be able to steal data and just access things that are running in that virtual machine. There's nothing to stop it from doing that. It's almost like the protection model's inverted. The corporate VM can't do things to the host platform, which is probably something you want, but there's no protection in the other direction. You need something like a true hypervisor like Zen running on the client device to provide those kind of guarantees. So there's been a lot of work in preparing Zen for that environment. making sure we've done a good job of power management and so forth as well. So not only are we seeing Xan on laptops, but in even smaller devices like smartphones. There's a port of Xan to ARM, and more folks are getting involved in that effort. But even if you think about something like a smartphone, you know, you might want to run three virtual machines. One VM, which is controlling the radio, so that it'll be running all the software, the GSM or UMTS software. Another virtual machine, which contains all of the software which was supplied by the vendor or operator, so you know, your calendar software and everything else, address book, etc. And then a separate VM for everything that the user downloads. And so no matter what rubbish you download and malware reinstall on your phone, you're still going to be able to make that 911 call. And I think we'll see virtualization spreading onto these kind of devices more and more as time goes on. They have many of the same problems which PCs have had. So Xan really started off life in the university. This is a slide from a project which was started in 1999, which was really what we developed Xan for. But this whole model that we're trying to build has now got a name. It's now called cloud computing. And Xan is really playing a huge part in cloud computing. Almost, the vast majority of the cloud vendors are using Xan at their core. So, in particular, folks like Amazon, who are probably the largest cloud computing provider right now, use Xan, but also many of the others too. And Xan's heritage of coming from this background of cloud computing, of trying to get this strong isolation between the different virtual machines, it's great to see that it's now being widely deployed and is really driving the commercial cloud. So that's the success of the university project. But we'll see cloud infrastructure becoming more important and augmenting IT infrastructure over time. So this ability to be able to augment your data center or computing facilities that you own by buying things incrementally from the cloud. And, there'll be devices which will make it fairly seamless and easy to move virtual machines which are running in your data center out into the cloud. And you might do that for things like disaster recovery purposes, or just because you need more compute resource for a given task, you can actually expand it out and run it on a service like Amazon. And the fact that you're running Xan in the enterprise and Xan out in the cloud just makes it all a bit more seamless. So just in terms of where you can get Xan from, then obviously you can roll your own, as many of the large enterprises and cloud providers do. Folks like Amazon and Google, Rackspace, and all these other folks roll their own instance of Xan. If you want to get Xan as part of an OS, then obviously Red Hat, Novell, Sun, Oracle all have Xan built into their OS instances. And there are plenty of different vendors that are now shipping platform integrated virtualization. So, not tied to any particular OS, but are OS agnostic and just host virtual machines. Obviously, the HP and Dell ones built into the hardware. Citrix, which is the company that acquired ZenSource, which is the company I work for now. But also, I think one of the most exciting areas is seeing Xan now appearing in client products from, the companies like Phoenix and Neoclus and I think Leonova have announced one, where we're actually seeing Xan being built into laptops and those kind of devices. And I think that's, we're going to get to see more and more of that over the next few months. So, I think virtualization is destined to become ubiquitous on every machine for every workload. It'll just be a property of a machine when you buy it, a property of your data center. You won't think about buying virtualization in future. It'll just be something which is built in and there. And we'll see that on client devices as well as servers over time. And I think Xan really does offer the best performance. It's the best performing hypervisor out there, and it has the best architecture to be able to provide a secure environment for hosting VMs. I think the Xan community has really grown over the last few years is continuing to grow, and we're seeing Zen appear in more and more diverse products, both in the server space and in the client space. So I'll stop there, and if there are any questions in the last few minutes.
Just to talk for a moment about where KVM's at, and potentially try to help us understand where Red Hat has decided to align themselves with that.
Right. So, you know, Zen is a hypervisor. If you look at the sort of the academic definitions, if you like, you know, a hypervisor is something which runs on the bare metal. It's just a thin layer that you then have operating system instances running on top. What KVM is a kernel module that adds virtualization capabilities to Linux. So it's kind of quite a different architecture. It's perhaps far more akin to, say, virtual PC or VMware Workstation in terms of its architecture. And, you know, I think KVM, I don't really see KVM and Zen as particularly being competitive. I think that, I fully understand why the Linux community are keen on having KVM as an option. But if you actually want a true sort of OS agnostic bare metal hypervisor that really is able to take advantage of all of the or maximizing security, then you want to use a true hypervisor like Zen, and that's why we're sort of seeing Zen being built into hardware from folks like HP and Dell, and KVM is a valid alternative, and I think will be particularly beneficial for things like Linux on the desktop and things like that, where you just want to fire up another virtual machine, and it's handy to have KVM there.
I'm sorry to come back to that, but on some hardware vendors now reloading a KVM hypervisor as well.
I'm not aware of anyone actually, selling KVM. I don't know about certainly not the tier one vendors. Maybe, but. Certainly the intention. You know, there's always the possibility of bugs, but we do put a lot of effort into at least ensuring that the architecture is able to protect us against bugs in many components. There are, to give an example, one of the most complex components that offers a very sort of broad attack surface is the component that emulates hardware. So emulates network cards and IDE hard disks and so forth. And if I had to worry about getting all the bugs out of that, that would keep me awake at night. All of the other hypervisor vendors have to worry about doing that. But whereas with Zen, we were able to move that out into to run it in its own virtual machine. And one of the cute things about doing that is it actually turned out to improve performance, because it actually means the device model runs in the VM closer to the actual VM that it's providing service for, and you actually end up with performance benefits too. So that was a kind of a happy side effect of improving security. So certainly the intention would be to, there are various folks at like Navy Research Labs which are trying to get some very high certifications for Zen, and obviously the Zen community is encouraging that work. So, Zen is kind of OS agnostic. There are plenty of versions of Zen which don't run Linux at all. But in terms of which versions of Linux have been optimized for Zen, Zen is Zen optimizations for Linux are now in upstream, mainline Linux as part of the Paravert Ops extension. So you can, be able to boot a 2.6.27 kernel on Zen using those ParaVertOps extensions. Any other questions?
So for the future of Xen, I've seen you release it like the Dale Arbor. But how is that going to support when you go to the Dale Arbor and you start throwing in HBA adapters and you got to do multi-pathing and all that? How is that integration going to be far? Because I mean, you literally have to become an OS in order to support all this additional.
So, you know, the key thing is optimized for a given, platform. So you know if you're shipping it as part of the hardware, you know exactly what hardware you've got in there, and then you can create, drivers for that specific hardware. The other thing that we're seeing is that with some of these new smart I/O devices and I/O MMUs, then actually the hardware is able to virtualize itself and appear as multiple entities, which can then be safely passed up into the guests. So you end up having to worry about driving less of the hardware yourself and then just pass it into the guests. Any more questions? Okay, thanks.